Today's talk is on the four satipatthana. The foundations of mindfulness. Practically speaking, there's no more important set of dhammas than the satipatthana. It's fair to say that they are the core of the mundane practice, called the Pubanga Magga, the path that leads to what we call the Arya Magga, the Noble Path. The Buddha said about the four Satipatthana that they are the Ekayana Magga, means the straight path or the one-way path or even the one path. Ekayano Ayang Bhikkhave Maggo. The Buddha didn't say this about any other Dhamma, that the four Satipatthana are the straight way, the direct way to five things: to the purification of beings, the overcoming of sorrow, lamentation, and despair, the freeing oneself from bodily suffering and mental suffering, finding the truth of life, the true path, the true way to go, and finding Nibbana, seeing for oneself Nibbana, that the Satipatthana are the direct way to see Nibbana. That's where they lead, that's the only way they lead, they don't lead anywhere else. If you continue to practice them, there is in no uncertain terms, will it lead you directly to the freedom, complete freedom from suffering. The Buddha guaranteed that with the practice of the four Satipatthana, at most 7 years of constant practice, one could become an arahant. This means if you stay in your room and practice walking and sitting for 7 years, there's no way that you couldn't become an arahant. If not an arahant, he said, well, maybe an anagami at the very least. And it shouldn't even take 7 years. For some people it will take 6 or 5 or 4. Some people even in 7 days through the practice of Satipatthana can become an arahant. So this isn't an ordinary Dhamma. If there's any Dhammas that you're to memorize, obviously this is the core of our practice that we follow. And if there's any Dhammas that you were to memorize, it should be these four Dhammas, the four Satipatthana. Kaya, Vedana, Citta, Dhamma. These are the Buddha called them the gochara, the range or the pasture. He called them the petika visaya, the realm of one's father or one's forefathers, the realm of the Buddha. He said if you go outside of this, he likened it to one's ancient ancestral grounds. Of the idea would be where you're safe. So certain animals are safe in their own gochara, their own realm. Like small birds have to be careful to stay away from the open areas, so the big birds, otherwise the big eagles and hawks might catch them. And the Buddha said, as long as you stay within the four Satipatthana, you'll be safe. He said, it's how you become your own island, Atadipa, or your own light, guiding light, how you can guide yourself. Someone who practices the four Satipatthana doesn't need guidance from anyone else. Once you have these and you know how to practice them, you can theoretically guide yourself. Obviously, having a teacher makes it a lot easier and is of great help. But the Buddha said, Atadipa, Atasarana, you'll be your own refuge if you practice the four Satipatthana. So about the word Satipatthana itself, before we get into the four, and there's not a lot to say about them anyway, because of course you're already practicing them. Satipatthana, the word Sati we've already talked about. Now Sati we translate as mindfulness, But as I've said, that is not a great translation. Unfortunately, it's the translation. It's become the word used throughout Buddhism to translate sati. However, the word sati means much more like remembrance, something about recollecting or remembering. And so in ordinary usage, the word sati would mean the ability to recollect things that happened long, long ago. Someone who has a sharp memory, you could say they have the power of sati. Some people have such strong memory they can remember their past lives. Obviously, for most of us, even remembering our childhood is difficult. Early childhood, some people have vague memories of their early childhood, and you consider that to be impressive. Some people can go further and remember past lives, and this is one of the supernormal powers that people have observed and have attained and can describe having attained them through the practice. But obviously this is not what is meant by satipatthana. The Buddha said again and again to not go back to the past. It's great if you can remember your past lives. There's great lessons to be learned, I'm sure. But it's not the way to become free from suffering. The Buddha said, let go of the past. The past is gone. Don't worry about the future. The future hasn't come yet. See clearly what happens in the present moment, what arises in front of you. And that's what is meant by satipatthana. So sati means to remember. How do we understand that you should remember the present moment? To understand this, we have to go back to the basics of the Buddha's teaching in terms of cause and effect. Ordinary experience is not a cause for suffering. Ordinary experience, you can say, is dukkha, you can say it is unpleasant sometimes, painful sometimes, certainly not worth clinging to. But it doesn't in and of itself cause problems for us. People think that when they have pain, this is a problem. When they hear loud noises, see things they don't like, they think this is a problem. When they have experiences that are unpleasant, they think this is a problem. The problem is not the experience. The problem is our reactions to the experience. The Buddha said the cause of suffering is not having this experience or that experience and not being able to escape it. The cause of suffering is craving, is your desire for things to be other than what they are. When you don't have what you want, the desire to get it. When you have what you don't want, the desire for it to go away. These kinds of desires, these kind of reactions to things, how we judge things. And so this could be understood as a kind of forgetting. We don't normally think of it like that, but what the Buddha is pointing out here, that if you stick with the actual experience of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling and thinking, and the bodily experiences, the mental experiences, if you can stick with them without getting lost in reactions or even getting lost in extrapolation, making more out of things than they are. If you can simply say, as the Buddha said, ditte dittamattang bhavissati, what is seen will just be what is seen, not more, not less. If you can stay with that, the reactions don't arise, and so suffering doesn't arise. Not getting what you'd want, getting what you don't want, they don't have a chance to arise because the wanting and not wanting don't arise. The experience stays as just an experience. And so when the Buddha says remember, he means to go back and stay with the actual experience. He's using the word sati in this way to tell you not to lose sight of it, not to let go of it and get caught up in your ideation about it, your reactions and extrapolations about it. Whatever you experience, try and experience it just as it is. This is what it means to remember. And this is why so often in meditation you see the usage of a mantra. The mantra is meant to remind you. The Buddha, the texts explain that the proximate cause of sati is something called tira sanya. And I've talked about this before. Sanya is recognition. When you recognize, oh, now I'm seeing something, that's sanya. Tira sanya, tira means strong. So tira sanya is when you augment the recognition. So you recognize seeing and you remind yourself that seeing means you make it stronger. And the more you say to yourself, seeing, seeing, the more firm and fixed and focused your attention is. So any kind of mantra, any kind of meditation you'll see, even samatha meditation, they use mantras to gain sati, to gain this recollection of the experience, so the mind doesn't wander, the mind doesn't extrapolate, the mind doesn't waver. And these are the characteristics of sati. Sati has the characteristic apilapana lakhana, means it has the characteristic of not wavering. And it can be likened to a pillar that is set in the ground, where the ordinary mind is like a gourd or a pumpkin floating on the top of the, like a beach ball, we would say, floating on top of the water. The mindful mind is not floating. The mindful mind is fixed, is focused, is grasping the object. And this is what the word satipatthana means, because patthana we translate as foundation, but we miss the fact that the reason the Buddha used this word, which is probably etymologically more like upatthana, which means establishing, is because that's what sati is about. Sati is this pillar that you establish in the object, you fix and you found, you set in the object. So when you say to yourself, you see something and you say to yourself, seeing, seeing, or you hear something and you say to yourself, hearing, hearing, you're fixing, you're grasping, you're focusing your attention on the object, rightly grasping it. Grasping rightly means when you pick up a knife, you have to grasp it by the handle. If you grasp it by the blade, this is wrongly grasping. If there's a poisonous snake, the poisonous snake is very venomous snake is very dangerous. But if you grab the snake properly, it has no power to hurt you. Experiences like this, even the most dangerous, the most deadly experiences, the most horrific experiences, when grasped correctly, cannot lead to suffering, cannot cause torment or stress for the individual who is practicing mindfulness. Satipatthana is something that absolutely will change your life. It's something you can practice for yourself at the dipa. You guide yourself. A person who practices this, how many times we hear people who take up the basics, the very basics of satipatthana, even practicing at home, reading books about it, how it changed their lives. It's something that absolutely do not sleep on this, as they say. Do not be negligent about this. The practice of mindfulness is something so valuable that it absolutely will lead you closer and closer to all freedom from suffering. The word satipatthana means the establishing of mindfulness, or the foundation of mindfulness. So there are four foundations, means four things on which you establish mindfulness. The four satipatthana are actually based on the five aggregates, the five khandhas, which we already talked about, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana. But in practical terms, it's too complicated, and it's perhaps even too intellectual to think about sanya and sankhara and vijnana as separate. So they, generally speaking, they're mostly boiled down to citta. Of course, dhamma includes them as well, but if you take the first three satipatthana, you really have everything you need. Kaya, the first one, is mindfulness of the body. So when we focus on the stomach rising and falling, this is mindfulness of the body. When we walk and the foot is moving and we're aware of the foot, and we know, oh, this is right, goes that, or stepping right, this is stepping left, this is mindfulness of the body. Any acknowledgement of bending and stretching and so on, knowing that you're sitting and walking, all of this is mindfulness of the body. This is the basis of vipassana practice, the basis of satipatthana practice, is the body. You'll see in the text they talk about how this is the Kaya Nupassana. First of all, they say mindfulness of rupa, which is in the five aggregates, the parallel to body, is the beginning, the way to begin in the practice of vipassana. Because the mind is too subtle and too quick to change, too hard to chase after. So being mindful of the body is absolutely far, far easier. And as the texts say, as you focus on the body and as the body becomes more clear, as rupa becomes more clear, nama meaning the mind and all of its aspects, thinking and emotions and so on, become clear as a result, because they arise based on the experiences that you have in the body. As you walk, you will notice the mind paying attention or not paying attention. As you sit and watch the stomach, you'll see the mind doing this and doing that and reacting. The mind will be much easier to focus if you stay focused on the body. They liken it to a hunter who wants to catch a wild animal. They don't go running through the forest or the jungle looking for the wild animal. They go to where the wild animal will have to come. They go to the water. And when they sit, when they hunt, they sit by the water and they wait for the animal to come. We do the same with the mind. The mind, of course, is what we want to learn about. It's the most important. The body is not so important. Why do we focus on the body? Because the mind will come there as well. Absolutely. As we are focusing, that's the mind focusing. So the mind will be there and you'll see all the aspects of the mind indirectly by focusing on the body. It's also in the texts explained as the easiest for especially people whose faculties are not well developed. So worth noting for people who have Alzheimer's or are dementia, or maybe not to that extent, but whose faculties are more feeble, or children whose faculties are not yet developed. So if someone is bedridden or something, they can just focus on the rising and falling, or small children who haven't yet learned much about the world or reality or life, start them out to focus on the body. Mindfulness of the body can often be enough for such people. Of course, for anyone, mindfulness of the body can be enough, because you'll also see the mind and so on. Nonetheless, equally as important are the other satipatthana, and they're an equally important part of our practice. The second one is vedana. And so mindfulness of the feelings, happy feelings, calm feelings, neutral feelings. Vedana is considered to be the meeting point of everything. It's the crux. Because as Paticca-samuppada says, vedana paccaya tanha. So because of vedana as a cause, there arises tanha or craving. Without vedana, there would be no. You can't not have vedana, but it is the spark. So the most important, some people say, to be mindful of is vedana. If you're mindful of vedana, then the tanha cannot arise. And so we have to be vigilant. Obviously, when we feel pain, it's a real cause for anger and disliking to arise. When we feel pleasure, craving will arise. Even when we feel calm feelings, there can be subtle attachment to the calm, and there can be ego thinking one is special because of one's calm, that thinking that everything is perfect and there's no need to meditate because you're so calm and happy and peaceful and so on. So mindfulness of the feelings is the second important part of the practice, the second satipatthana. The third satipatthana, citta, covers everything else, the thoughts, the activities of the mind, thinking about the past or future. The focused mind, the unfocused mind, the heightened mind, and so on, the distracted mind, all kinds of mind, the mind with greed, the mind with anger, the mind with delusion, basically focusing on the activities of the mind. For practical purposes, we restrict this to only noting thinking. So it doesn't matter you're thinking about the past or the future, you don't have to worry about the details. All of that will become clear as you note thinking. You don't have to diversify it. If you're thinking anything, you just say to yourself, thinking. And as I said, these three really make up all of our experience. The only thing that's really missing is the emotions, which for practical purposes, we focus on the negative emotions, or we focus on what we call the hindrances. And these aren't just emotions, but it's sort of a vague parallel or a basic parallel. The hindrances are things that drag us down and keep us from being focused, keep us from seeing clearly. They keep us from finding peace and happiness and success. They're not just hindrances in meditation, they're hindrances in life. And these are the beginning of Dhamma. So the fourth satipatthana is often translated as mind objects, and it really, really shouldn't be. There's almost no chance that that's the correct translation. And I won't go into detail as to why it was called mind objects. I don't really understand. It's a big mistake, actually, that they translated it like that. Dhamma here really most likely means the teachings of the Buddha. If you look at it, it's a set of dhammas, a set of things that go in order. You have the bad ones first, the nivarana, the hindrances, as I said. And as you are mindful of the hindrances, the mind becomes clear. It's like your parting of the clouds, or the turning on of the light, the dispersing of the fog. And you start to see the senses and the aggregates. You start to see that reality is just seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking, and the five aggregates that arise based on that. So understanding these. And then the bojangas, the seven factors of enlightenment begin to arise. The seven factors of enlightenment. So if you look at these, this is a progression. And so the Dhammas is really better translated as the teachings or the practice of the Buddha, the teachings that lead to the realization of the fifth Dhamma, which is the Four Noble Truths. So what we have in the first three is our basic practice, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the feelings, mindfulness of the Dhamma. In practice, for a person beginning to practice Satipatthana, the Dhamma you can consider the progression away from the five hindrances. So a person who is starting out should absolutely be vigilant about these five Dhammas, the five hindrances, which are Kama, Chanda, Vayapada. They all have Pali names. In basic, ordinary speech, liking, disliking, drowsiness, distraction, and doubt. These five are the five things that drag you down, the five things that are making it hard for you to practice all the time. Hard for a person to get into meditation, to continue to meditate, and to succeed in meditation. So these are absolutely something that we should be vigilant about and focus on, and they're the beginning of the progression. So as we practice the first three, we have the fourth one, will start to be reduced. As the hindrances start to be reduced, you'll start to experience the senses more clearly. Sometimes even with your eyes closed, you'll start to see things. So a common thing for us to remind meditators is to note if you see lights or colors or pictures, to not get distracted by them, to not think they're something special. This is just the mind becoming clear and you're starting to experience the senses more clearly. Hearing becomes more clear, tastes become more sharp, feelings on the body, even thoughts become more clear. The senses become sharper. So when you see something, you just say to yourself, seeing, seeing. When you hear, you'll say, hearing, hearing, and so on. Being mindful of the experiences as they arise. As you do that, you'll start to be able to pick it apart and see the three characteristics in regards to these things, and your mind will become stronger and stronger, and then the bojangas, which we'll talk about later, will arise, and eventually you'll see the Four Noble Truths. So this is the practice of Satipatthana, the practice of Kaya, Vedana, Citta, and really Dhamma as the progression of practicing the mindfulness in general. Why we practice these is to become free from suffering. As I said, the Buddha gave five reasons for practicing, but ultimately, as we practice these things, it changes our mind. If you continue to practice these, your mind will become clear. You'll free yourself from stress and all sorts of mental illness like depression and anxiety. People who have addiction or aggression issues, stress and sorrow, lamentation, despair, mourning over loss, and so on. If you continue to practice, mental suffering will ease. And physical suffering will no longer bother you. As you learn to experience the pain just as pain, it will no longer be a cause for suffering for you. Pain will just be pain. Eventually you start to understand the way of life, and you gain a way of life no matter what you're doing, whether you're a lay person or a monk, living in the world or living in the forest. You learn how to live life in peace. You get a better, more organized state of mind and a more organized mental process. Your mind naturally settles into focused, clear states where you're able to, you go from not knowing what to do in any situation to knowing exactly what to do in every situation. As you learn how to be mindful and how to take any experience, beginning with mindfulness, which will then show you the way, show you what is important and what is not important, what is right and what is wrong, and will keep you in the range of what is safe, safe from the armies of Mara, which will drag you down into evil and into suffering. And finally, through the continued practice and diligent practice, eventually the mind comes to see that nothing is worth clinging to. And as a result of the practice of mindfulness leading to this clarity of seeing things just as they are, the mind lets go of all arisen phenomena and enters into cessation, which is freedom from suffering. And the person as a result is become a noble one, who frees themselves gradually from greed, anger, and all delusion, and frees themselves from all suffering. So the essence of there's so much to say about mindfulness. I tried to keep it brief and to the point. This is obviously what we're already practicing, which should be very familiar to all of us. If it's not, then you should go back and review these teachings again, because this is the core. This is absolutely the most important thing for you to keep in mind and for you to focus your attention on during your practice of the Buddhist teaching. So that's the Dhamma for today.